We have six cases on the calendar this morning. Four of them from the PTAB involving the same parties. One from the Veterans Court and one from the Claims Court, and these latter two will be submitted on the briefs and not be argued. The first argued case is Apple versus Masimo Corporation, 2022-1890, Mr. Sprankling.
May it please the Court. My name is Thomas Sprankling, and I represent Appellant Apple Inc. in this matter. I'll try to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, it is a bedrock principle that the language of the claims control the scope of the invention. Here, the claim language all points in the single direction, that the Board erred by construing processing characteristics as characteristics determined from a signal received from one or more light detectors. Independent Claim 1, for example, shows that the inventor knew how to write out the Board's preferred construction and yet still chose to use the broader term processing characteristics elsewhere in that very claim.
Well, is it your contention that processing characteristics has a plain and ordinary meaning that wasn't applied here?
Yes, Your Honor. The plain and ordinary meaning we proposed to the court, let me just make sure I'm reading this precisely, was characteristics or features obtained for obtained from or used for processing information. That's in our petition. And so, Your Honors, we would submit that at a minimum, the board erred by adopting this narrower construction.
But this isn't really a plain and ordinary meaning of the terms, right? This is more a question of whether or not there's any limitation to what could be construed as a broad, unlimited term. Isn't that what's at stake here?
Your Honor, I might respectfully disagree with that. I think we have proposed a plain and ordinary meaning of the phrasing. I would refer you to the active video case, which we cite in a reply brief. That actually involved far more complicated language than what we have here. I can quote it to you if you like, but I'm sure you can find in the decision. And there, this court affirmed the district court that interpreted, you know, basically just looked at the words, said here's what they would mean to an ordinary person. Didn't look to further evidence, just looked at the terms in the language of the patent and construed them from there.
But this term is so broadly construed by you, it could fit in any context, processing characteristics with no limit. So isn't it fair game in claim construction to look at the entirety of the specification and see if there's any real meaning in the context of these claims? This is a context question, right?
So, Your Honor, a couple of responses to that. So I think, first of all, we would say that the specification doesn't provide any help on this context, in this area. It uses the term processing characteristics only once, and I think even my friends on the other side would not argue that that's definitional. What the board relied on was mostly one embodiment, which appears in Figure 4 in the patent. And of course, it's well understood that in general, you cannot read an embodiment into the scope of the claims. The second point, Your Honor, I do think this is important, is we didn't write the patent, right? The inventor wrote it, and he or she chose to use very broad language. And you can actually see this if you look at Claim 1, because I think this is worth looking at. The text is very specific for the first two limitations, but as you start going further into the claim, it gets broader and broader as you go. The inventor made a strategic choice that they wanted to use that term processing characteristics, which might sweep in more information, and not the earlier language they used in that same claim. But, Your Honors, if Claim 1 doesn't convince you, I do want to move to Claim 4, because there we have a superfluity problem. And I think we lay this out best at page 17 of our opening brief, where we lay out what it would actually look like if you wrote the board's proposed construction into the language of the claim.
Before you get to that,
yes.
And I'm fine with you doing that, but is there any dispute? The whole purpose of the invention is to get information from the patient and use it to adjust the device's power. So isn't it fair game in construction to look at what the whole point of what's going on here and to limit what is otherwise an unlimited term of processing characteristics that could apply to anything, anywhere, and construe it in the context of the invention?
So, Your Honor, respectfully, no. And I guess one additional point I should have made to an earlier question you asked. You say that the term is unbounded, is overly broad. We submit there are actually some things that would fall outside of that. Let me give you one example. Battery level in the device, that's not something that relates to processing or is linked to processing in any way, but might otherwise map onto the terms of the claims. If the battery level reaches a certain point, you might switch to higher power processing. So we push back respectfully on the notion that this is an unbounded term. But, Your Honor, the reason why I don't think we look to the vague notions in the specification, which, unlike all the cases the other side has cited, does not use this term in a definitional sense, even implied or explicitly, the reason why we care about this is the public notice requirement of patents. You get several decades protection for patents, and in exchange, you lay out your invention clearly in the terms of the claim. That's the deal that was struck with the public. Now, sure, if you write in the specification, I mean term X to mean Y. Absolutely, you can do that. If you say, I mean term X does not mean term Y. Absolutely, you can do that. But we don't have anything like that here. And the other side has not pointed to a similar case that I'm aware of that deals with this context where the key term to be interpreted appears only in the spec once and has no definition either implied or express. And so, Your Honor, we would submit that in that situation, you must look to the plain meaning of the term. And I think it's enough for you just to disagree with the board's interpretation. You could send it back, and the board could apply a plain meaning at that point. You don't necessarily need to adopt our plain meaning, although we think you certainly could. But I respectfully submit that with Claim 1 and Claim 4, as I was mentioning, it's very difficult to read that limiting term into the broad language of processing characteristics. So I did want to return to Claim 4, Your Honor. So if you look at page 17 of our brief, we lay out our opening brief. We lay out what it would look like if you actually wrote this term into Claim 4. So instead of saying, wherein said processing characteristics comprise signal characteristics from one or more light-sensitive detectors, you end up with basically the same sentence twice. Processing characteristics determined from a signal received from one or more detectors configured to detect light comprise signal characteristics from one or more light-sensitive detectors. There's two points of superfluity here. You have the characteristics determined from a signal that's repeated with signal characteristics, and you also have detectors configured to detect light, which is repeated with the from one or more light-sensitive detectors. There's no there. Now, even if we accept the board's construction, which is that it's only partially duplicative, and I don't understand my friends on the other side to dispute that there is indeed some duplication in Claim 4 from Claim 1.
Yeah, but the answer was it provided additional details.
Well, I might push back on that slightly, Your Honors, because the additional details that the board pointed to was signal characteristics, and as written in here, you would have characteristics determined from a signal, which seems very similar to me. But regardless, Your Honor, I would point you to the Siafi case, which I recognize is an unpublished decision, but I think it's persuasive precedent because it's directly the situation we have here.
Right? Can't be persuasive precedent by definition.
I'm sorry?
It cannot be persuasive precedent
Excuse me, persuasive reasoning, perhaps, Your Honor. Thank you. So Siafi dealt with precisely the situation we have here, where there was one portion of a dependent claim that was rendered superfluous based on the construction. And the Siafi court held that was enough. And I think this goes back again to the public notice requirement that this court has spoke about in the Bicon case. We need the public to understand what is in the claims. And, you know, unlike in statutory construction or something like that, the inventor is actually getting a bargain here, right? The inventor is getting the patent monopoly for a set amount of time. They have an obligation to lay this out. And just one more point on this, Your Honors, because I do think it's important. They could have fixed this problem at any time. They could have amended the patent during the initial examination process. They could have amended it during the IPR process. We raised this point prominently in our opening brief. The other side has no response to this. So if they truly wanted processing characteristics to have this narrow definition, you know, from one signals received from one or more light detectors, they could have simply written that into the claim and resolved this issue. And they chose not to do that. So, Your Honors, I would submit when you have two strong textual indications in the language of the claims and nothing in the specification that speaks to this issue and nothing in the prosecution history that speaks to that issue, all the interpretive clues we have go towards the conclusion that the board was mistaken in this case and that a plain meaning should be applied. Happy to answer any further questions about that. Okay. So our other argument, Your Honors, is related to the Diab prior art reference. I think start with our APA-related argument. So we presented two different arguments related to Diab in our petition. The first one was you can save power in a pulse oximeter by stopping something called the artifact suspension module entirely. And the board did not buy that argument, and we are not objecting to that in this appeal. However, we also raised the second argument, that you can save power by partially suspending the motion artifact suspension module. And I think it got a little bit, you know, it can be a little bit, I think there's some difficulty here because the phrase motion artifact suppression is very similar to motion artifact suppression module, but one is the broader term and one is the narrower term. So the clearest place in our petition, Your Honors, that I would point you to is at Appendix 85, where we have a diagram that lays out Figure 21 from Diab. And I think this is probably the clearest place in the record, so I just want to linger on it for a second. Figure 21 from Diab lays out the motion artifact suppression module. So this is a diagram of it. And we circled two things in kind of ugly red boxes. And we said, these are additional processing for motion artifact suppression. And we left two things uncircled. That was the DC removal and the bandpass filter. The only reason to explain why there would be additional processing for motion artifact suppression within that module is under a partial suspension theory. And we explain that theory further in our reply brief, and that's at pages Appendix 1688 to 1689, where we use exactly the same diagram that we used in our opening petition. And following it, we said, as shown in the example above, the clean plethysmograph waveform can be generated using traditional filtering techniques, such as bandpass filtering of the infrared signal, if motion is not detected, or using a correlation canceller 571 if motion is detected, consistent with Diab's disclosure. Alternatively, and I won't read it out to you, but alternatively, we said, you could suspend the module in its entirety. So we presented this theory in our petition. We defended it in our reply when the other side suggested that our argument was limited to the suspension. And we also raised it at the hearing itself. I can point you to Appendix 2005 there, where we lay out one of our theories for obviousness was, quote, you shut down at least the portions of processing that are devoted to motion suppression. So, Your Honors, we submit that at a minimum, the board had an obligation under the APA to address this partial suspension argument. And that requires itself a remand on all the Diab-based claims. Your Honors, if you have no further questions on that, I'm happy to answer them. But otherwise, I will turn to our last argument, which is also Diab-related, that the board erred by importing an inherency standard rather than the traditional KSR obviousness standard. This is, you know, fairly straightforward. The board used the word necessarily when talking about the learnings from Diab and Amano. I think it said it was not obvious because suspending use of the module wouldn't, quote, necessarily lessen power consumption. That is at Appendix page 31. And of course, I don't think the other side disputes that the requirement that something necessarily must be present is both inherency and not required. KSR is a much more flexible standard. And I understand the other side to be, their main argument to be that, well, we forced this notion on the board by using confusing language and the board just adopted our language. And I want to be very clear, Your Honors, we didn't use the words necessarily. We simply talked, we did a regular obviousness standard analysis. Our expert used the phrase straightforward and obvious, and there was no suggestion of inherency in that. I understand that to be their primary response to the inherency argument. I'm happy to hear what my friend on the other side says when he stands up. Your Honors, if you have no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
What did they say before you?
What do you mean you didn't use the word necessarily?
Yes, Your Honor. I understand my friend's argument to be on the other side that we basically put words in the board's mouth.
Right.
And we didn't use that word necessarily that the board then put into its decision. We focused more on the regular obviousness standard. So our expert, as I said, mentioned straightforward and obvious.
You used the word, maybe not the way the board understood it, but you can't say you didn't use the word.
Well, Your Honor, I will stand up in rebuttal and I'll look back to make sure I'm getting this precisely right. If we did use it in some context, I apologize. I believe what we said is that it would result in something, or, you know, we use the would phrasing rather than necessarily. But if we use necessarily, I will double check and I will correct the record.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I will just address some of the points that counsel made for the appellant. This, I think, as pointed out by Judge Prost, is just an ordinary run-of-the-mill claim construction under Phillips. This wasn't about simply the plain meaning of the words and didn't need anything more. The parties submitted constructions for these terms. And what they were arguing about was whether or not what was the ordinary meaning So that all the talk about lexicography and disavowal and special definitions, that wasn't at issue. This was simply under Phillips, a normal run-of-the-mill case.
What's your response to the other side's argument concerning public notice and how public notice relates to claim construction?
Sure. As determined by the board, one of ordinary skill in the art would understand this claim to require that the processing characteristics are derived from the signals. And the court didn't just move to the spec. And we, of course, know from Phillips that the spec is the single best source of understanding. These were not just plain terms that they argued didn't require any further construction. So the public was on notice as a result of what the claims actually said. And the only input in the claim and the only input in the patent, there is only one input to this system. And that's receiving one or more signals from one or more detectors configured to detect said light after attenuation by said tissue. I think what appellants are asking is that be inserted everywhere that term shows up, processing characteristics again. But the board did not just rely upon one embodiment in the spec. The board and Massimo relied upon the claims and the understanding that is the input to the system. It is the only input to the system. So those processing characteristics must come from that. And this is part of the public record as well, which means nobody needs to ever worry that Massimo is going to somehow suggest that these claims could just obtain anything from anywhere. A completely unbounded thing. We can't have the claims be so broad as to encompass things which are not supported by the specification. And that comes specifically from Phillips. Phillips has changed the law from the Texas Digital time, as the court full well knows. We're not at the time where, hey, it's just what the words in the claims are. The case law since then has made very clear that we turn to the entire intrinsic record. And in fact, Phillips said the specification is always highly relevant. The best source of understanding a technical term is the specification from which it arose. The claims do not.
Yeah, but we have a line of cases, and I know there are all these lines of cases that flow in claim construction, but the Thorner line of cases that say if there's just some plain and ordinary meaning, you need a clear and explicit disavowal or some sort of lexicography in order to limit the broad meaning of the claim.
Correct.
So, and Phillips doesn't change that.
Correct. And in this case, as you pointed out previously, we weren't dealing with any contention by Apple that they just were understandable on their face and that therefore maybe a dictionary would be appropriate or nothing because everybody understands them. We're talking about a technical term, processing characteristics. And that processing characteristics, unbounded by anything, unbounded by the spec, could be anything, right? And so we weren't dealing with something that just has a plain meaning.
Well, I think your friend would probably say on his public notice is, yeah, there's, if that's the case, then it was incumbent upon the patent owner to explain or curb or clarify that term as it appears in the claim. It's insufficient to do it in connection with embodiment and effect.
I think in the context of the patent, and read as the intrinsic record as a whole, as the board did. The board didn't just start and end with the specification. The board, in pages 9 through 14 of its opinion, went through the entire intrinsic record, starting with the claims, noting that the claims had only one input, noting that there was, and they also dealt with the Claim 4 issue and the Claim 8 issue. Claim 4, they understood, further refined the claim to signal characteristics, and Claim 8 to power consumption. There were two types of things disclosed in the spec, physiological parameters and signal characteristics, which could be used for this threshold. The processing characteristics, therefore, it's logical, it's broader than just signal characteristics because there were two different types described in the spec. But in terms of whether the public has notice, one of the cases that counsel relied upon actually I think is pretty telling, and that is counsel had turned to Chaffee and mentioned Chaffee. That was one of those cases where the court determined there were two elements in the dependent claim, and one of them would be rendered completely superfluous. And so the claim differentiation was not overcome.
So we're talking about claim four here in the
comparison. Claim four. And claim four just says that the signal that the processing characteristics comprise signal characteristics, right? And they like to gloss over that. Signal characteristics from the one were light detectors. And the light detectors are indeed the only thing that was involved. I think the kinetic concept case is also instructive. The term was wound. That's a pretty plain term. Wound can be almost anything. And the court held there that to construe the wound to include things that weren't in the spec, which was only skin, to construe wound to include fistula and pus pockets would expand the scope of the claims far beyond anything described in the specification. I think that's what Apple is asking us to do here. It's just ignore the rest of it. Look at these things in a vacuum. Look at the terms in a vacuum. And construe them devoid and separated and divorced from the entirety of the intrinsic record. Intellectual Ventures case, I think, is very telling. And Apple, in its reply, suggested we tried to cabin that case. The claim term was application-aware resource allocation, a technical term like processing characteristics. The construction of that term was a resource allocator that allocates resources based on application type, which can be discerned using information obtained from any of the network layer, transport layer, and application layer 7. There was another claim that specifically had had two of those layers in it. None of that was in the claim that was being construed or the term. In our case, the only input to the system are the detected signals. The argument there was about whether or not it could be any one of those as described in the spec, or it had to be just one of that. It had to at least come from layer 7. But the term was application-aware resource allocator. The same argument could be made there. Well, we should just let that be stand. That would indicate we don't need to provide a construction to terms. We're just going to let the term stand, and we're going to give them to the jury, contrary to the precedent of this court. On DIA, if the court has no more questions on claim construction, on DIA, on the issue of these two arguments that were made, it's well covered in the briefs that, and throughout the reply, the headings say that it would not execute, it would suspend and not execute the operations. However, I think that we may have missed something in the board's decision. The board did a very good job here of going through the evidence and cataloging it. And what the board said at page 28, Joint Appendix page 28, in that regard, we conclude the petitioner does not offer adequate evidence or argument that Diop contemplates either not generating a clean plethysmograph, which would have to happen if you took their approach, or some non-use of that module in so generating a clean waveform. The board's decision did not hinge on whether it was all or some. And something that the board never stated that was in Apple's reply at page 24 was that the board required the entire module. The word entire doesn't show up in the board's opinion. What the board said was, or some non-use of that module in so generating a clean waveform. That's at page 28 of the joint appendix. Interestingly, on that point, Apple simply argued that a skilled artisan could use only portions of the motion artifact suppression to create a clean, and that it could be used. That's not the test. The question is, would one of ordinary skill in the art do it that way? And why would they do it that way? And the board found Massimo presented plausible reasoning and evidence that such power reduction may not occur in Diab's differently structured and configured system, and credited the expert of Massimo as being the more credible. He also mentioned inherency. And I think Judge Reyna had it right when the term used, they used the word, it would result in power consumption. The board was simply responding to the argument it was presented with. Apple argued this in their reply to the PTAB at page 9 in the heading and page 13 in the text. That's joint appendix 1691 and 1695. And they did the same thing at the petition. That's in the joint appendix at 85. The board simply found the evidence of Dr. Monsetti more credible. Posito would have found it obvious based on a would not have found it. What Apple stated, sorry, was that Posito would have found it obvious to suspend and not execute operations of Diab's motion artifact suppression module. The board found that Apple failed to show a reduction of power follows from the teachings. Apple never explained how a Posito would do that. And what Apple had said was it would result, and the board was simply responding to the argument that was prevented. The board did not put an inherency obligation on Apple. Apple took the position that it would result. Didn't say it might result, said it would result. Again, at page 85, or at 1691 and 1696. And if there's no further questions, I would cede the rest of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Frankly, has a little under 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to keep this to 3 points. So with regard to the claim construction point, my friend on the other side referenced Phillips. We agree Phillips is the controlling law in the circuit. But what Phillips says is that the claim language is the bedrock of any interpretation. Now, we don't dispute that the specification and prosecution history are relevant and important, but the problem we have in this case, Your Honor, is that the specification history only uses the word processing characteristics once. Now, my friend mentioned the kinetics case, which talks about wounds. I actually think that's a bad case for them, because in the specification there, wounds came up multiple times. And so the court was able to take a look at that word in context, how it was used many, many times, and come up with a concrete definition. Here we only have one referencing to processing characteristics in the spec and nothing else. Now, related to that point, Your Honors, I understand Your Honor Judge Prost to be suggesting that this really only talks about light detectors. Respectfully, that's not quite true. Figure 3 in the patent has a provision 302, which is a sensor. The specification says that that could include EG 110, which refers to a light sensor, but it doesn't limit it to light sensors. So there is a room in the patent specification for something that goes beyond that. And I think the last point I will make, the notion that my colleague on the other side mentioned about physiological measurements being a processing characteristic in the spec, that's defined nowhere in the spec. That is what their expert said without citation in his report. Now, very quickly on the Diab point, on the Appendix 28, we think the language my colleague has pointed to is ambiguous because the board talks about total suspension above and total suspension below. To the extent you think that the board bracingly addressed this issue, it clearly did not grasp it in the full meaning of what we suggested, including in the petition with our annotated diagram. On inherency, I just want to respond to Judge Reyna's point. Your Honor, we looked quickly back at the briefing. We didn't see the word necessarily used in the context of inherency. It came up briefly when talking about the total suspension,
yeah,
but not the partial suspension.
I may have misspoken. You didn't use the word.
Yes.
You used it, it would.
Yes.
And the board came back and reasoned that you meant necessarily.
That is correct, Your Honor. We would submit that's error. Our expert used the proper obviousness standard. We were relying on KSR, and so there's no reason for the board to incorporate a whole legal doctrine based on the word would. But I don't believe we used the word necessarily.
Yeah. You're right.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honors. I think my time has expired. If there's any further questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted.
Thank you.